Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's January 5th, 2018. We made it through the first week of the year. I hope you're all warm and safe out there. Happy to have you here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. We have a great show for you today. Paul Nolte is in the house from Kingsview Asset Management. It is Jobs Report Friday. We're going to go over that, talk a little bit about the economy. We might also hit some of the things you heard in the montage this morning. A bipartisan budget deal is still being worked on. The Illinois Department of Innovation, you heard there, also working to see what we can do to get not only better streetlights, but maybe more innovation in the city and the state. And also, we'll keep tabs on that cyclone, the bomb cyclone that's hit the East Coast, affecting air travel here in Chicago. And a little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here with our regular Friday talk about air travel, commercial travel, and also aviation. One of the safest years, if not the safest years on record last year. And we'll talk to Brian about that. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 75 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are pointing up as well. Everything in the green in Europe this morning, and also in Asia. Oil this morning trading at 61.45 a barrel, which is down just about 56 cents. Couple of stories that we are watching for you this morning, in addition to the jobs report, which we will talk with Paul Nolte about a little bit later on. Merrill Lynch, you may have seen this story yesterday, has told its advisors and also clients that Bitcoin is off limits for now in trading. Some 17,000 clients of Merrill Lynch are now off the mark there in terms of not going toward Bitcoin. It's an area that many places have allowed, and we saw it come onto the CME. At least they're keeping track of it, so we'll watch, see if other advisors do the same thing. Not long after the Dow hit 25,000 yesterday, President Trump turned his eye to another milestone. He is looking at 30,000 now. Is that even possible through the year? We'll talk with Paul about that as well. Uber co-founder and former CEO Travis Kalanick plans to sell 29% of his stake in the ride-hailing service, a news report says this morning. The deal is part of a transaction with investors, including SoftBank, that would bring Kalanick about $1.4 billion. Paul Nolte here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning and Happy New Year to you.
Good to see you. 25,000 yesterday. Did you pull out your 25,000 hat and have your streamers and noisemakers?
We have the 1,000 marks just kind of sewn on very lightly so we can tear them off and put the next 26,000, 27, and right on up to 30.
We often hear President Trump say a lot of crazy things, but the Dow 30,000, is that even possible, do you think, this
well,
year?
It's a 20% move from, it's less than a 20% move from where we're at right now. It's 12% or so for the market. It's very possible. The discussion now is we're passing these 1,000 milestones very quickly, but it's really only a 3 to 4% move anymore for the markets to get there. The first half of the year, I think, is shaping up to be very, very strong, so it is very possible that we get to do there.
And if you look at the last year, the full year 2017, it made it up above 20%.
Yeah, it was just over 21% for the year, and surprisingly enough, from our perspective, was that bonds actually did well. Even though the Fed raised rates, the bond market actually had a positive rate of return last year. So it was a very good year all the way around. International investing, which we like a lot, was up over 30%. So it was a very good year for investors overall.
And even for those of us who just have a 401k, I was looking through mine over the past week, and wow, it was a nice little return for last year.
Yeah, so it was difficult last year to actually lose money. So it was most all asset classes did very well last year.
All eyes are on the jobs report today. What are we thinking we'll see?
The estimate for this year, or for this jobs report, is about 190,000. We should see manufacturing pick up. We're seeing some very good reports from the manufacturing sector. Services are maybe a little bit on the softer side. What's going to be important is what they do to the back months, October and November. Historically, or I should say over this last year or so, they've generally revised those downward. We'd like to see those revised higher. So that would be something that we're going to keep an eye on. And, of course, everybody's got is very concerned about wages. We're seeing wage pressure in a lot of places. I'm hearing it from some of my clients who own businesses that, they're having a rough time finding people and having to pay up to get people in. It's not showing up in the overall numbers, but it's certainly something that's out there.
And it was something that was hinted at in the Fed minutes, too, that they're seeing some of the Fed districts where this is stronger than others in the country.
Right, and that's part of the reason why you're going to the expectation now for the Fed to raise interest rates four times this year. The market is starting to wrap their collective head around that thought, and we're seeing that expectation start to rise fairly dramatically over the last week or two.
ADP had a strong report that's sort of a little foreshadowing, or is foreshadowing the word when it's positive?
It can be. ADP and the employment report directionally, yes, but not necessarily magnitude. So they look at a completely different universe than the weekly jobs report or the monthly jobs numbers. What we take a look at is a weekly unemployment claims, and that is setting new all-time lows. So we can see continued downward pressure on the unemployment rate and upward pressure on new job creation.
If we see the jobs report come out today and it's really strong, what will that have included hiring for Christmas and the holidays and seasonal hiring through November and December?
It'll have some seasonal in there, but they do seasonally adjust it. So they do know that every year Christmas comes around in December and they are going to be hiring people. So there is a seasonal factor in there. Sometimes that does play with the numbers. So if we hire more for the seasonal workers than we normally would, you'd get a big bump up in that rate because of that seasonal factor. But when you take a look at the numbers, we take a look at them usually on a year-over-year basis. And on a year-over-year basis, we're seeing job growth slow down a little bit. It's not at as rapid a pace as it has been in the last 3 or 4 years. But still, if we get anything north of 150 to 175,000 in new jobs, that's going to be a big positive for the economy.
I saw something and thought of you when I read it. J.P. Morgan's chief strategist predictions for 2018, and one of them on the employment suggested the unemployment rate could fall to 3.4% by the end of the year, which would be the lowest since 1969. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if we go back to 1969, we saw huge wage pressure and we saw huge inflationary pressures really start to build into the system in 69, and that carried us through a decade of very high inflation rates. I'm not sure that we're going to get that low, but certainly there's a lot of things in place right now that will allow us to do that. We're seeing retiring baby boomers, so we're taking a large chunk out of the labor force, not being replaced by all the new entrants coming in. So that's going to create pressure on the unemployment rate. We could see, we're at 4.1. We could very easily be down below 3.7, 3.6. I don't know if we get to that number, but the trends are certainly in place for that to happen.
Paul, hang on. We're going to be back with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in just a minute. We'll continue our regular Friday conversation here on The Opening Bell. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, a couple of stocks of local interest. Abbott Labs is off just about 0.2% at $58.52 a share. And also this morning, McDonald's is up almost 1% at $173.70 a share.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors pushed the major stock indexes onto higher ground Thursday. The Dow Jones was up 152 points to close above 25,000 for the first time ever. The Nasdaq also ended with a new record, 7,077, up 12 points. The S&P 500 advanced 11. Both Macy's and JCPenney reported holiday sales growth, an encouraging sign as traditional retailers continue looking for ways to compete with the online outlets. Macy's still expects an annual sales drop at established stores and plans to close another 11 locations. Southwest Airlines will pay $15 million to settle a class action lawsuit that accuses four carriers of conspiring to boost prices. Southwest denies wrongdoing but settled to save the cost of more litigation. American, United, and Delta plan to continue their defense. SpaceX will launch its biggest rocket yet later this month. Company chief Elon Musk says the Falcon Heavy will carry an original Tesla Roadster into space. Musk also is CEO of Tesla. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:23. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management this morning. Paul, something you said in our first segment stuck with me. If you didn't make money last year, something wrong. Going forward, wouldn't that also hold true? If you're not going to make money with your investments and in your portfolio, something's wrong?
Well, so far this year, the market hasn't gone down.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how long that'll continue. Yeah. One of the things that we've looked at and we've talked about internally is that we are in a period where we could see, and we're starting to see some of the press reports on it, as a melt-up. And that's where investors are starting to recognize, last year was a very good year. I didn't participate maybe as much as I could have or should have. And start to shift money more into the equity markets. And we've seen a little bit of that so far this year. We may see more of that as we get better economic data. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The market's going up. Why? Because investors are excited about it. Why are investors excited? Because the market's going up. And you get into that cycle, and you can get into that feeding frenzy, if you will. And that's part of the reason why Trump is talking 30,000 on the Dow. And that is a possibility as investors get very excited about adding to equity positions.
And it leads to the next question, which is, should we be doing anything differently with our portfolios to maximize or capitalize on the possibility of making more money?
Well, certainly you want to shift the assets around. We've talked all year, last year, about international. And international, as I mentioned before, was up over 30% and can be a very good place to go in the next couple years as we see a lot of those markets that are very inexpensive, especially relative to the U.S., kind of play a catch-up game. We're seeing global markets and we're seeing global economies start to do very well, and you're getting a lot more leverage in the international side. So you don't necessarily have to change your allocation between stocks and bonds. You don't necessarily have to be more aggressive. It's wonderful when the markets go up, but there will come a time when the markets are going down and you want to have that buffer in bonds or in cash. So realize that, yes, when the markets go up, everybody is the fear of missing out. Is really what we're looking at today. But realize that you need to be able to live with that asset allocation, especially if the markets do decide to go down.
Is it true that as the American economy does better and the American markets do better, the rest of the world plays catch up in the year or so after that?
It was described to me many years ago when I was out visiting, wandering around Europe as a college student. We got to meet with some different executives, and their comment was, if you look at the global economy as a train, the U.S. is the front end of that train. So as the U.S. economy goes, and we're seeing expansion, we've now been expanding at a okay pace, 2.5%, more recently 3%, you're going to see that in foreign markets. The international markets, especially emerging markets, are about 60% cheaper than they are in the United States. So you can buy a very similar company in the international market for a much bigger discount than what you can buy the same company here in the United States. And that's the attraction right now for the international markets. The weaker dollar has certainly helped that as well, and we see that continuing through this year.
I mentioned in the opening Merrill Lynch banning its advisors clients from doing Bitcoin. We talked about this late last year too, about whether you would recommend this for your clients. It seems that some of the established voices in this area are saying, hey, wait, not so fast yet.
No, it's something that we're still trying to figure out where it fits. It doesn't fit the currency definition. So cryptocurrency, okay, that's a nice title, but it's not really a currency in the stereotypical sense of the word. It fits more as a commodity, gold, silver, platinum. It doesn't have an industrial use. It doesn't have really a consumer use. But it moves extreme daily moves, 3, 4% both directions. We saw it get up to 20,000 down to 13,000 in a span of a week. So it's something that really, from our way of looking at things, it's very difficult to get at on a regular basis and be able to sell. You know, I'm always talking to clients about, don't tell me how to get into something, tell me how to get out, and that's more important. And for Bitcoin, it's a difficult item to get into and out of.
Yeah, speaking of getting out of it, I think one of the original investors in Bitcoin got out of it completely over the holiday season.
Yeah, one of the people that was talking about putting together a program or had something together and sold their position. So again, you can now get at it at the CME and on some of the exchanges from a futures perspective, not owning the Bitcoin itself. But there are so many other currencies that play off of Bitcoin Ripple, et cetera. And those are starting to show some signs of life as well.
Always good chatting with you. Remember this day, because it's, I feel we both are on the same optimistic page, which isn't very often that we're there for the year. So
I'm optimistically cautious, let's put it that way, or cautiously optimistic.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in as always, and we'll see you again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and Kingsview at kingsview.com online. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. In the age of Trump, the frequency of protest has skyrocketed. To help people express themselves, a Chicagoan created a protest banner lending library, where banners are hand-sewn and made to say whatever someone wants. Created by a professor at the School of Art Institute of Chicago, the library has produced around 700 protest banners since the election. Tempus, Eric Lakofsky's cancer-fighting startup that's using artificial intelligence to personalize patient treatment plans, just announced a data partnership with Vanderbilt University. Tempus will work with Vanderbilt to share data and provide sequencing and analysis to Vanderbilt's patients. And Next Capital announced it has raised $30 million to grow its digital financial advice platform. The company allows financial firms like John Hancock and Transamerica to provide advice to their customers more efficiently. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:37 here on our Friday edition of the program. And next up is Brian Summers of Skift, the airline business reporter there. It was a big year last year for airline safety. We'll talk more about that. Brian is with us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's talk more about those numbers. No jet crashes anywhere in the world, commercial jet crashes anywhere in the world last year.
Yeah, you've probably heard this before, but it's actually true. According to the data, you're more likely to die in a car crash than in a plane crash. By many standards, last year was the safest ever for commercial air travel. No commercial jet anywhere in the world crashed last year. In fact, there hasn't been a U.S. jet crash since 2001, so about 17 years. Really, right now, it's sad to say, but the fear is probably more terrorism or even an errant missile, as we've seen in the past, or even something like a pilot suicide, which happens on occasion more than the traditional the plane going down because it's unsafe. So, yeah, it's a great time to fly.
Well, you know, for a certain generation of Americans, me included, I remember there used to be, you know, multiple plane crashes a year. What is it about travel today? Is it the way these jets are built or maintained or all of the above that make them so safe?
Well, you know, we don't always think of our government doing great work in the regulatory arena. But one of the things that the NTSB and other government agencies did is over about a 50-year period, if a plane crashed, the government found out exactly what happened and then changed the rules accordingly. So I was just looking this up recently. I mean, something as simple as smoke detectors in the bathrooms did not exist until a plane went down because there had been a fire in the lavatory and nobody knew about it. And so every time, you know, when you were younger that a plane crashed, something probably changed afterward. And that's why we're as safe as we are right now. We learned from a lot of past mistakes.
And yet here, as we are a year into the Trump administration, there are some inklings from Washington that there may be some regulation rollbacks where air travel is concerned. One of them I saw yesterday was that they might relax some of the rules for pilot sleep and rest. Is this something we really want to be fooling with?
Well, I'm not 100% an expert in safety, but it strikes me that you do not want to mess with regulations regarding safety. And I think pilot groups feel the same way. It's one thing if you want to allow airlines to charge more fees and roll back some restrictions there. But to mess with safety just seems like a bad idea.
Let's talk a little bit about what we might see for us in 2018, just in travel, you know, generally. What do you think the trends are going to be? What do you think the big stories might be?
Well, I want to start with a little bit of the good news. I do expect that airplanes will be on time even more often in 2018. We We've seen a bunch of big carriers, Delta, American, United, really place an emphasis on on-time performance, getting the planes out as quickly as possible. So that's good for customers. Some other trends that we're going to continue to see may not be as good. What I expect is that U.S. airlines will still do this thing where basically you get what you pay for. So you can buy a first class ticket, you can buy a business class ticket, you can buy a premium economy ticket, you can buy a coach ticket with extra legroom, or you can buy a ticket in the back. And depending on how much money you pay, that's going to be how well the airline treats you. That kind of makes sense from a business proposition, but I think most travelers are familiar with the era of as recently as 5 or 10 years ago where there was first class and there was coach, and everybody in coach was treated exactly the same way. I think that's over. We'll also see more fees, I expect, especially maybe baggage fees on transatlantic flights. Those have been free for a long time. I think airlines are going to start to charge.
It's one thing to be able to pull that curtain between coach and first class. It's another to have all these different sections in the what used to be the coach section. Do you think there's room here for a passenger revolt, and would that have any impact at all?
I suppose there could be room for a passenger revolt, but I doubt it. People seem to be handling it reasonably well. Some of the listeners have probably been on flights where flight attendants will actually bounce around the cabin. So they'll have an iPad or another tablet, and the tablet will say these 20 passengers, because they're especially loyal to the airline or they paid a lot of money for their ticket, they get free food. And so they'll go, and some customers will get free food and most won't. And people seem to handle that okay. I get the feeling that consumers understand that they get what they pay for. It's certainly true in everything else they do.
You talked about the on-time on-time status of airlines and that sort of thing. What difference does it make where you fly out of in terms of your on-time quality? I saw a report recently about how airports are ranked where this is concerned.
Well, generally, they say that you're more likely to be on time anywhere that there's good weather. So for years, the most punctual U.S. airline has been Hawaiian Airlines. It makes sense. They don't have a lot of bad weather in Honolulu and the other places that they fly. But, you know, O'Hare did okay last year. About 80% of its flights arrived on time, and on time is within about 15 minutes of the scheduled time. That put them just behind Atlanta, Denver, and Dallas-Fort Worth. But, you know, O'Hare is getting a lot better in terms of on-time performance, and a lot of that is because they've built several new runways in recent years, and I think that they have one construction underway on one more, so that helps. And also, as we discussed earlier, United and American, the two big airlines there, are making on-time performance a priority. So, yeah.
One of your recent stories, we were talking about airports, is some of the design secrets from the people who've been designing airports over the years. This is probably one of my favorite of your recent stories. Talk to me about what this story was about and what you found out.
Well, I spoke to an architect who had worked on terminals at a bunch of airports, including O'Hare and one in Indianapolis. And we talked about the things that he does in the background to make the travel experience a little bit better for customers. So it's about calming people. The architects know that people get stressed when they travel. And he said it's about clear, simple design. They like to keep noise and public address announcements to a minimum. We talked about security screening. He can't do anything about the TSA process, but one of the things that he likes to do is design wide open security screening sections, and so people can get distracted like they do at Disney World. Another thing that they like to do is pump as much natural light into the terminal as possible, but reduce the glare. So just a lot of little things to make people just a little bit happier when they travel.
What would you say was the most surprising thing from your interview? What did you find out that maybe you didn't know?
Well, one thing that he talked about is the airport of the future, and he talked about how all of these airports have these grand lobbies that people used to go into because they had to check a bag or they had to check in for their flight, and you remember there used to be lines of 10, 20, 50 people in the lobby at O'Hare. That doesn't really exist anymore. People might check in online, and even if they have a bag to drop, they'll drop their check bag right away and they'll go through security. And so there's this idea now that you do not need those big lobbies anymore. But what you do need is bigger gate areas. So the question is how to take that space that already exists in the lobby where there's too much of it and allow people more room for the gates. Nobody's come up with a great answer for that because the spaces are in different areas, but perhaps they'll get there.
What else have you been writing that you want everybody to know about?
Well,
pick one, right?
Right. I won't call it a perk about my job. One of the interesting things about my job is, of course, if something happens to me on a plane, I can write about it. So I have a bigger megaphone than some other people. And you may have seen last week, I flew from Los Angeles to Honolulu on American Airlines, and I booked this new premium economy cabin, and I had read all the advertising about what the premium economy cabin includes. That's things like free food, free drinks, something they call an enhanced pillow. And I knew, of course, exactly what I was going to get, and then I got on the plane, and the flight attendants told me that I was wrong and that I was to receive none of this, and if I wanted food, I would have to pay for it. So when I landed, I ran this by American, and they admitted a mistake. They gave me and everybody else on the plane the money back that we had paid for the food, and everybody got vouchers. They did assure me that it wasn't because I was a journalist and that I would have gotten the money anyways if I had complained. But I was surprised that American dropped the ball on this sort of thing. I do feel like if a hotel or any other businesses advertises a service, they usually do provide it. And airlines, I think, drop the ball on customer service perhaps a little bit more.
Yeah, and it brings up that question of what happens, you know, in the short-term and long-term when airlines don't deliver on their promises. You have to wonder if you didn't bring this to their attention, whether or not anybody would have noticed it. And then going forward, does this, you know, impact their reputation at all?
Well, you know, there are only so many choices for air travel. And as they always say, and this probably includes me, maybe in the future, if American Airlines is $10 cheaper than United, I will probably fly American. I think that there's an understanding that travelers have that air travel, it will not always go smoothly, and you have to roll with it.
Yeah, and also speak up if you think something's wrong. Who knows? Maybe you are right and they are wrong.
Absolutely. Do speak up. People do pretty well when they speak up, especially when they're right.
Brian, good talking with you. Safe travels.
Thanks so much.
Brian Skift is an airlines business reporter for Skift. That's at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com. You can also follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers. That's Brian with an I and Summers, S-U-M-E-R-S. And don't forget to sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. I get this in my inbox, and it is a good read every week. It's at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:51, and on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 81 points. NASDAQ futures are up almost 25 points this morning. Let's find out more about agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve, as we check in from the desert in Arizona, where flu is running rampant among a lot of people, and the hospitals are filling up, and people are fighting the flu. But anyway, we do want to talk about how the agricultural prices, corn, soybeans, and wheat, impacts the agribusiness, and it affects a lot more people than you might think. For example, yesterday Cargill reported its profit fell as the grain oversupply limits trading. 4 years of bumper grain and oilseed harvests have squeezed profits for Cargill, and their rivals like Archer Daniels Midland, Bunge, and Louis Dreyfus. And traders are expecting more of the same this year, prompting cost cuts. And then there's the story of Monsanto. Yesterday reporting, profit misses estimates. Farmers continue to face a tight market and low prices. And as a result, it had an impact on another major company. And weather continues to be a concern. Wheat, however, apparently made it through the sub-zero temperatures that we have seen. And so right now, at least this morning, we're looking at wheat prices down. Soybeans, though, are showing good gains this morning, up as much as 7 cents in the nearby. So it's an up and down market depending on the commodity that you're trading in.
Now, I know a lot of people are looking down to the south and saying, oh, what's going to happen to commodities down there? But, I mean, right here in our own backyard, there are concerns. And people might ask, well, why is that? The crops are out of the field. Well, you got to get that stuff places, and there's ice on the Illinois River and the Mississippi River, and all of the sort of shipments are backing up. That's becoming a big concern, isn't it?
It is becoming a big concern because whether it's winter or summer, we have to be able to move the product into the world market. And with some of these river shutdowns because of ice and freezing, it's going to be a backup of these commodities, which will just add to the problem as we move further into the winter. So in addition to the cold weather, because the winter wheat crop is very susceptible to freeze damage when there is no snow cover to insulate the wheat, and that has certainly been the case. Hardly any snow cover in winter wheat country, and as a result, it'll take a few days, but they'll be out trying to find out how much of an impact the cold weather has had on the wheat crop. So weather always a concern, and you can't fool with Mother Nature.
I saw a story the other day, and a lot of people are talking about DACA for the Dreamers and immigration reform, and agriculture group, I believe in Washington State, was talking about how they're going to need, agriculture is going to need more than just this DACA fix, because so few of the people that are involved with DACA are actually working on farms. Immigration still a front and center as we begin the new year, isn't it?
Front and center, and there's going to be a lot of attention on that White House meeting this coming week to take a look at doing something with the immigration law. Now, there's concern, of course, for individuals who have the possibility of being sent back home. But as far as labor is concerned, right now in the Imperial Valley on the border of Arizona and California, they're harvesting the lettuce crop. 90% of the lettuce consumed in the United States this time of the year comes out of the Imperial Valley. And that's why they call it the Lettuce Bowl. And when lettuce gets ripe, you have maybe 1 or 2 days to get it harvested at its peak. And if you don't have labor, it sits in the field and rots. So yes, immigration is definitely continuing to be a major problem.
Orion, any New Year's resolutions this year for you? What are you thinking of?
You know, I stopped making resolutions a couple of decades ago because I never kept them. But this year, I put out a list of wishes for the upcoming year. And in addition to good health, of course, on my list is a farm bill that will be done on time, that will preserve the insurance feature for the crop production, and an immigration bill that we just talked about that will provide labor to harvest the crop. And then the ongoing challenge of farmers being understood by non-farm city consumers. And they're continuing to work hard on that. But that was another item on my wish list, that we'll be able to increase knowledge of what it takes to put food on the table, clothes on our back, a roof over our head, and now energy in the tank. And that'll be talked about in Nashville starting tomorrow at the American Farm Bureau Convention. That's the largest farm organization in the United States. And they lead off 2018 in the convention arena with their convention at Opryland in Nashville.
All right. Well, I love that. I love having a list of wishes. That's always better than resolutions. Orion, good chatting with you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. Make sure you hear the morning show with Orion and Max Armstrong, 5 to 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, right here on 720 WGN. The WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook includes the big jobs report, which is coming out later this morning, as we talked about with Paul Nolte earlier. Employers are expected to have added about 190,000 jobs, unemployment rate staying steady at 4.1%. The Commerce Department will report on the U.S. trade gap for November. Also today, the Institute for Supply Management, a trade group of purchasing managers, issues its index of non-manufacturing activity for December. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, January 5th. We'll be back bright and early on Monday morning with another edition of the Opening Bell. Until then, I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.